MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to First Strike here on VSiN. I'm your host, Dave Ross, coming to you from Circa Sportsbook in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Going to have Lou Finocchiaro, Jordan Sherwood, Dan Vreeland, and Reed Kuhn to round out our great crew each and every week here on First Strike. We're going to look ahead to Merab Dilashvili against Peter Yan. Should be a really highly anticipated main event this weekend. But we do have to look back at UFC 285 that just ended on Saturday night. And wow, what a night it was. Of course, the return of the GOAT, John Jones. We mentioned it all week last week on First Strike. Really hard to fade a guy of John Jones's caliber, even though we hadn't seen him at heavyweight, didn't know what he'd look like. People were kind of making jokes about the weight. Boy, did he look great in getting a quick stoppage of Ciryl Gane in the very first round. And maybe the shocker of all shockers came in the flyweight title bout, as we have the first Mexican-born women's champion now in the UFC in Alexa Grasso, as she defeats the bullet Valentina Shevchenko. That fight closed with Shevchenko minus 1,000 here in Las Vegas. It is technically the biggest upset we've seen in women's championship history. So congratulations to everybody that had Alexa Grasso last Saturday night. Let's bring in the aforementioned Lou Finocchiaro. You can follow Lou as I do at Gamblou. He is the host of the Bout Business podcast. And Lou, boy, I saw it coming with John. I did not see it coming with Grasso. How do you summarize what you saw at UFC 285?
I look at things a little differently. We'll get to performance, but I saw 13-1, 13 favorites and one underdog. Mm. That's what I saw.
Yeah, exactly right. It was a great night for the faves until Grasso really upset the apple cart with the shock heard round women's MMA. That is for sure. Let's get to this weekend's card, because again, Lou, you and I have talked about it here on the network. Sometimes after a big pay-per-view, it really feels like the general public, maybe even the casuals, really involved because it is a guy like John Jones. You can really have some opportunities this week on a quote-unquote smaller card like we have, but it's a really deep card all of a sudden with the addition of Nikita Krylov against Ryan Spann, a main event fight we were supposed to see a couple weeks ago. That's now a catchweight at 215. You got the battle of the Alexanders, Volkov against Romanov here, and then, of course, Peter Yan against Merab Dilashvili. How do you handicap the main event here? We've seen the number go up on Peter Yan in the last couple days.
Yes. Bantamweight 135. Yan, unusually enough, enters this off two losses by the record. Both split decisions. One of them, honestly, I scored for Yan. And I think a lot of people did as well. So that could be 1-1. Yan, really a fluent boxer, very well-rounded, really great fighter, going to take on a Tasmanian devil vice grip of a Georgian in Merab Dilashvili. Styles make fights. This sets up to be a really interesting one. As far as price is concerned, Yan opening minus 170 seemed fair to me. Now he's a bloated 230 and rising. And I suppose I can see the path for victory for each athlete here. but that line's starting to get a little bit high, and I almost wonder where it's going and when it may stop.
Exactly, and that's the point here as we talk first strike on this Tuesday before we get to Saturday. It's up to 250 here at DraftKings for Peter Yan. So you mentioned how it opened and where it is now. Dvalishvili right now plus 210. And you mentioned the styles, right? We get it. The decorated boxer and striker that Peter Yan is, he's going to want to keep distance in this potentially five-round matchup. Right now, it is juice to the over 4.5 rounds here. Dvalishvili needs to be more of that wet blanket and try to really encompass and envelop Peter Yan. Are those the two pathways that you see for each fighter?
I tend to think that Merab is the wear out. It's typical, and we know this isn't anything that I'm enlightening anyone with, but Yan spends two rounds reading his opponents. And this is a five-round fight, and he's usually afforded that. The issue with Merab is he's also a guy that never runs out of gas. He's going to take you down eight times per 15 minutes. So he just doesn't stop. And so to me, this, you know, Yan wants it up. Merab wants it on the ground. It's more than that. It's what's going to happen in the last two rounds here, because I'm almost figuring Merab to be a little bit in a situation where he's a front runner and he wins the first round or two.
Yeah, you mentioned the last fight for Yan, really bitter pill for him to swallow against Sean O'Malley. So I know he probably doesn't want it to go to the cards this time around, a fight that I think the Yan backers think he won against the Sugar Show. But you look at the numbers here, right? By decision for Yan, it's plus 110 if you don't want to lay that big number. For Merab, it's 3-1 here. If you think the fight's just going to go the distance and you don't want to pick a winner, you got to lay $2. What's the more likelihood scenario of happening? Is it that this fight does go all five and then you got to hold your breath again if you're a Yan backer?
Here's how I'm going to handicap it, Dave. This is available now, and I've just made the release, or I should say, my own bet. I'm about to release it. And my feeling, and this is DraftKings, the fight to be decided split or majority decision plus 400. I think this thing's going to go right down to the judges, and if it does go to the judges, just like you're halfway insinuating, nobody knows what could happen. So 4-1 money on a fight that I see very competitive, razor close, and in the judges' hands, I'll take it.
Absolutely love that breakdown to really get the best of the numbers there. Let's get to the co-main event on this one. And again, I mentioned it's a battle of the Alexanders here at heavyweight, Romanov against Volkov here. Volkov right now, but plus $1.35 we're seeing at DraftKings. Romanov minus $1.55. What do you make of this one with some pretty big boys? Obviously, Volkov pushing about 260 pounds in this one.
And getting thicker. His legs have changed since the Curtis Blaydes fight. He realized he had to get a little bit more girth. Here's a fight where Volkov opens minus 150. Now Romanov's the plus 150. And Romanov's coming off a dubious loss to Tybura, where to a degree he was somewhat exposed as singularly dimensioned. Volkov, again, I mentioned Blaydes once. He's already been embarrassed by a wrestler. He's got size on this guy, experience, and he's been in with better. I think Volkov's being underestimated and a decent value as a dog if you're not afraid of underdogs after last week's card.
No question about it, right. It was not a day for the dogs at UFC 285, but Volkov does feel alive at plus $1.35. I wonder if you think Ryan Spann is live now that we finally get the Nikita Krylov matchup. It's going to happen this time around. Catchweight at 215. How do you make for a fight that was supposed to happen a couple weeks ago, doesn't, but now you get Nikita back and healthy? Remember, he had a stomach bug, I believe it was the night of the fight, so that main event was canceled. We saw the emotion from Spann in his camp. He was literally in tears about how hard his camp had worked for him to get ready. How do you re-energize, kind of bottle that emotion again and get ready to go out and fight the fight again, but this time in a different weight?
Krylov has to get over whatever sickness it was, and I'm going to look hard to see what it was. It clearly was a minor thing, a cold or flu or something. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Spann, I think 2 hours later or a day later when they said, hey, we're doing this in 2 weeks, he was better then. So I think that emotion shows how much he and these young athletes have vested in their performances mm-hmm. for these fights. And then you take it away from them a few hours beforehand, it really rips them up. So really the questions here, what's the extra weight going to allow each guy to do for a huge guy like Spann? Can't hurt him. And for a guy like Krylov, probably makes him eat punches better. So at least that's how I'm coming at it. And really, my assessment from a couple weeks ago hasn't changed. I think Spann has to be the bully and get it done early. If not, the durability of Krylov is going to allow him to take Spann where Spann don't want to go, and Krylov will win inside the distance.
And Lou, I think that's a really part, important part of distinction here for this fight. That was going to be potentially a five-round main event. Now we're back down to three rounds, heavier weights at 215. So I look at the total at 1.5, because we know Spann's had issues with cardio. Does this help him with more weight, or do you think the adrenaline dump can happen when you're carrying around more weight than you're not accustomed to?
I'm going to have to wait and see, because on the one hand, I do think he gets the advantage from the weight, but Krylov agreed to it, and who knows if they weren't trying to get 2.25. Then Krylov said no. That said, I do think the extra weight allows Krylov to weather the storm. He is the more durable, longer termed fighting machine, at least prepared for such. He's been able to do such against big names. And I think he's smart enough to understand he's just got to drag this guy into the second round.
All right, I got about 30 seconds to go, Lou. Tell the people what they get when they listen each and every week to the Bout Business Podcast.
Bout Business Podcast is simply 14, 16 minutes of the final releases that I submit each week per each UFC card. We're on a good run right now because I listen to First Strike and get great opinions before I throw my podcast out there. And so I appreciate you having me on First Strike, Dave, and I appreciate everyone listening in.
Absolutely. I've got a little bit of bonus time with you, Lou, so I want to ask you one other question. There are some dogs in this fight. It was not a day for the dogs like we mentioned last week. When you look at the Queen of Violence, Ariana Lipsky, she is a dog here against J.J. Aldrich, and even Jonathan Martinez here, about a $2 betting underdog against Saeed Nurmagomedov. Is there any live dogs that you think the numbers, besides the fight we've talked about, that really still have some value here on Tuesday?
A lot of these lines have been popping around, and I looked at those two dogs, but those aren't two I'm really horning in on right now. Right now, I got my eye on Rafael Assunção. Ooh. And I also think this kid, Fremd, who's coming in, he's got some hotshot new debuter. Fremd's lost three against three tough guys, and he ain't going to be easy to beat.
I was looking at that one as well with Josh Fremd. We'll get into that fight card, that fight a little bit later on down the road. Lou, always appreciate it. As always, my friend, enjoy the fights on Saturday. We'll catch up again next week. When we come back, going to Chicago, Jordan Sherwood next on First Strike.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty: Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
DraftKings Sportsbook is giving you plenty of ways to bet the UFC. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. You're going to be able to bet on more than just the main event. DraftKings has great odds on fight lines, total rounds, and futures for all MMA events. Eligibility restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for all the terms and conditions. Always love going out to the great city of Chicago this time every week on First Strike. Of course, he is Jordan. He is Jordan Sherwood. You can follow him at Wood on ESPN 1000, the host of the unnamed MMA podcast. Jordan Sherwood, always great to catch up with you, my friend. Before we get into this week's card, okay, I was all over John Jones. That was easy money. Did you see the bullet being upset in now what is closed as the biggest upset in women's MMA championship history? She closed here in Vegas, Jordan, -1,000.
Yeah, shocking. Shocking that we saw that, because I thought Valentina Shevchenko was going to bounce back to the champion of old against Talia, you know, after her split decision victory over Talia Santos. Mm-hmm. I didn't think Grasso was going to pose too much of a threat on the feet or, you know, on the ground. But look, credit where credit's due, and that's why this sport is so awesome. Anything could happen. A live dog like Grasso was leading into the fourth round, a miraculous submission. If anybody caught that prop, good for you. I think your year is set from an MMA standpoint. And look, it's going to make it for an interesting handicap on that rematch, because I do believe we're going to get an immediate rematch because Shevchenko is such a dominating champion.
Yeah, one of our directors here, Jeremy Wingle, does great work. He had Grasso winning the fight, and he had Jones via sub. Pretty good day.
Oh, wow.
To cash
that
those tickets.
Very, very good day.
Jordan, let's get to this week's card. And again, when I look at the Krylov fight now, back on with Ryan Spann. This is supposed to be a main event 2 weeks ago. Of course, gets canceled because Nikita comes down sick on fight night. We don't really know exactly what that was. And now we're going to have this catchweight fight, not at five rounds, but three rounds here. And they're going to fight at 215 pounds. How do you judge that into your handicapping? Know now that it's a different weight that they're going to fight at. And again, we don't know what the illness was, but we did see the emotional toll it took on Spann having that fight canceled, and now it's rebooked.
Yeah, I mean, when it was scheduled to be take place 2 weeks ago, I had Krylov winning the fight. I liked him at the money line at $1.70, and I also liked the under, but I was safeguarding myself at 2.5 as opposed to 1.5. Both of the things that are taking place now, the catchweight fight at 215, and the fact that we don't have much information about Krylov and that illness, actually carries me a little bit more weight to favor Ryan Spann, because it's not a five-round fight. It's three. He doesn't have to worry about a grueling weight cut two times in the span of 21 days. And I think that, again, not knowing what Krylov had to deal with it, what's he going to be like come fight night? So I'm not as confident as I was in the Krylov money line. I'm still confident in the under. I still believe that both of these guys are finishers. Ryan Spann is either going to take advantage of the additional weight and get Krylov out of there early inside the distance, or Krylov maybe survives for a round and then gets his fight to the ground, where he'll have a decisive advantage and get Ryan Spann out of there. So I guess my answer is that I'm still confident in the under taking place, but not as confident as Krylov, because there's so many uncertainties about his condition leading into Saturday.
Yeah, you see that total rounds prop there stuck at 1.5. So the under right now juiced to -$1.35. The over, if you think you can get over that 2.5-minute mark there of round number two, would be plus money at +$1.05. If you think it's going to go the decision, +330. Don't have to pick a winner. Can this thing go 15 minutes? Kind of tells you out here in Las Vegas, they don't think that is going to happen. Let's get to the battle of Alex here in the heavyweight division. And this line has kind of flipped in the last week or so here, from Volkov being the favorite now to being the underdog against Romanov here. And you can get Volkov at +$1.35 where we stand. What do you make of that price change here with Romanov now being a solid -$1.55 betting favorite?
I think people are remembering that Alexander Romanov was a big-time prospect coming into the UFC, unbeaten, stumbled, obviously, his last time out against Marcin Tybura. And we know that Marcin Tybura has been around the UFC for quite a while, and he's one of the top 10, top 15 heavyweights. So all these guys do stumble at some point, and that was Romanov. But I think now you think about it, Romanov hasn't really struggled with guys on the feet and has taken people down when he's wanted to. And Alexander Volkov has succumbed to takedowns all the time. We've seen it even in fights against like Derek Lewis, yep, Curtis Blaydes. Guys get him to the ground and they keep him there. Volkov obviously will have the reach advantage. He's a tremendous heavyweight from a size standpoint and a length. But I think that Romanov should be handicapped as a favorite because he's not going to beat around the bush. He's going to get this fight to the ground. And look, it's juiced to the over. People are expecting it to carry on into the later round. Mm-hmm. So that's the type of fight that favors Romanov, you know, grueling clinch work against the cage and then eventually getting some takedowns and some top control.
Yeah. And again, what does kind of intrigue me there, Jordan, to that end, and I love where your brain's at here, is you look at the fight to go the distance, plus money, don't pick a winner, plus $1.65. So if Romanov can use that wrestling, will he get a submission? Well, that's plus 250 if he can get that, because you just outlined it perfectly. Volkov, you go back to the Derek Lewis fight. He wants to stand, trade, use his height, his reach advantage, and he's got a distinct reach advantage here, and maybe go towards a decision victory. Romanov, on the other side, has got to shoot. He's got to take the fight down to the ground. That kind of lends me to get to that over 1.5 and maybe take a stab that it does hit the cards at plus money.
Yeah, I think so. Look, you know, Volkov is a guy that could go three rounds pretty hard. You just mentioned the Derek Lewis fight. And I back at what that live bet was for inside the third round, what Derek Lewis was at and when he landed that KO with 10 seconds remaining. But bottom line is, yeah, Volkov likes to be at distance. He certainly can go three rounds. And Romanov, too. Romanov, despite, you know, being King Kong and you know, coming in with not the best body type at times, can go hard for three rounds. I'll be very curious to see what he looks like on Friday at the weigh-ins. If he looks conditioned, if he looks in weight, and is it expecting to be a three-round grueling matchup. But I think I like Romanov here on a Tuesday. I think he's the rightful favorite, and I like the over at 1.5 for sure.
Something you don't normally see, the KO prop for each fighter, KO, TK, or DQ, both 3-1. So very interesting, both of those on the level. For the sub, of course, Romanov plus 250. Volkov, not likely, 20-1 there as the extreme long shot to get a sub. Let's get to the main event, because I am intrigued by it. And again, I get it with Peter Yan, and we know what a decorated striker he is. He's lost his last two decisions. You can make an argument he should have won both of those on the card. I'm sure that the Sean O'Malley decision still sticks in his craw here. But now he does have 4 L's in that column, the same as Dilashvili here. I'm surprised that Yan is getting bet up. Are you surprised? Because now it's 250 here at DraftKings as we stand on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I am because, I mean, I no credit, you know, where Peter Yan's at him. He's an outstanding fighter and obviously, you know, could be a champion in this weight class. But the combination of, you know, what we've seen and how evolved Merab Dvalishvili has become standing and also with his relentless takedowns. And Peter Yan was controlled at times in that second Aljamain Sterling fight, you know, because of the wrestling, because of the athleticism. And certainly Merab doesn't have the athleticism that the champion in the bantamweight division has, but he's got probably more cardio and better takedown aggressiveness. And oh, by the way, he's the training partner of Aljamain Sterling. So it's another camp for Sarah Longo that's preparing for Yan and preparing for Dvalishvili. And a guy that could go hard for 5 rounds, you know, could go crazy for 5 rounds. I'm sure Merab doesn't want to mess around on the feet with Yan, because Yan is that lethal. It has that lethal striking. He could carry power into the later rounds. But just the pace that Dvalishvili is going to bring in, at 2-1 right now as a straight up money line underdog, I think he's definitely worth a look, because I think this is a guy that could be fighting for a championship. Maybe next, maybe he meets Sean O'Malley if O'Malley's successful over Aljamain Sterling, because that would be an intriguing matchup for sure.
You just stole my last question. That's exactly what I wanted to ask. Are we looking at the winner here jumps right back to a title shot, and maybe the loser for the championship gets the loser of this, right? We can almost see like a Final Four scenario.
Yeah, but I mean, yes, but you do have to take into account, you know, if Marlon Vera is successful or Corey Sandhagen, like, yeah, Chito Vera deserves something because he beat Sean O'Malley convincingly. Sean O'Malley has you believe he's still undefeated, but he's obnoxious and kind of a moron. But so, I mean, Chito Vera has to be considered into the mix for sure if he's successful or Corey Sandhagen. But yeah, we've got 5 outstanding bantamweights at the top of this level. And even Henry Cejudo is, you know, throwing his name out there, you know, in some way, shape, or form to get back into the challenger.
Triple C is going to be heard from again. Very quickly, got about 45 seconds before we have to say goodbye. Give me another fight on this card that you really think you see some value here on a Tuesday.
Yeah, I think Davy Grant over Rafael Assuncao. Yep. You know, Rafael Assuncao was supposed to go in the sunset, and then he had a pretty impressive upset victory over Victor Henry his last time out. So, but Davy Grant, from the striking and being able to go grapple for grapple with Rafael Assuncao. Rafael Assuncao has struggled with those big strikers. We saw it against Cody Garbrandt a couple of fights ago. So I think Davy Grant, minus 170, straight up win for him on the undercard.
What a pretty cool shot you have today of the second city behind you. Jordan Sherwood, I won't say the king of Chicago, but you do a hell of a job, my friend. Enjoy the fights. We'll catch up again next week.
All right, Dave. Thanks.
There he is, everybody. Jordan Sherwood. When we come back, we're going to go out to Dan Vreeland, get his thoughts. And he's got some sneaky picks maybe on the undercards where he sees some really good value here as we talk on a Tuesday. Come on back. First Strike here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Start your morning with VSiN Daily Morning Bets. Josh Applebaum gives you every piece of info you need to be ready for betting the day's biggest games in just 15 minutes. He discusses line movements, injuries, and what you need to be looking at before you make those bets. So make the VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast part of your morning routine. Download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Back here in Las Vegas, Dave Ross coming at you. Going to go out to Dan Vreeland. Always love catching up with Dan. You can follow him on Twitter as I do at Gumby Vreeland. And does great work at Gambling Podcast and Cateside Press. Host of the Top Turtle MMA and SGPN MMA Pods. The hardest working man in MMA. Dan, great to have you back on. Before we look ahead to this weekend, been trying to get everybody's thoughts as you kind of decompress from what you saw at UFC 285, the return of the GOAT, John Jones, now the heavyweight champ and a new champion and the first Mexican-born women's MMA champ, Alexa Grasso, with a shocker of the day for my blood. Dan, what was your biggest takeaway from UFC 285?
Man, I think it's just got to be how dominant John Jones looks, right? Because, like, I picked Surreal Game, you know, completely honest here, you know, hands up on this one. I picked Surreal Game to win this fight. I thought, you know, the years off, the, you know, size difference, all that kind of stuff would come into play. He made it look like it didn't. And not only that, as I will say, the most dangerous thing about John Jones now is he's no longer that John Jones who is very comfortable winning a decision, the one that beat, you know, Thiago Santos or the one who beat Dominic Reyes. He's the one who went out and put Shogun away. He's the one who went out and choked Loyola Machida cold. He's the one who went out and put Rampage away. And that John Jones being back is exciting to me.
It's amazing. I feel like we're in a time warp, right? All those great fights you just mentioned at light heavyweight for Bones. And now at 35, we hadn't seen him in 3 years. You forget he was the youngest light heavyweight champion in the history of the sport. And now he feels like a young 35 as a heavyweight champion. Looks like Stipe Miocic next. I can't wait to break down that fight when we get closer and closer to it. But let's get to this weekend's card because, Dan, I love it when you have a big card and maybe the first fight of the night you look at it, you get a winner, and you feel like you're already playing with house money a little bit. Cedricus Dumas against Josh Fremd in this one. Fremd is the dog here. What do you make of this one? Because I think you're looking at Cedricus and think that this favorite is the rightful one at minus $1.80.
Yeah, and minus $1.80, not a bad number here for Cedricus Dumas. And I've been following this guy on the regional scene. He's largely been seen as a dude who's a big power puncher. He's got incredible power in his hands, really quick, and he's very long. And that's really why I think I'm fading Josh Fremd in this fight, because not only is he coming off of a couple of losses, not only does he not particularly love to strike, but he's in there against the guy who, for the first time ever, is going to match his length. Josh Fremd is naturally a very long middleweight. He's going to be fighting a guy with a reach advantage over him for the first time in the UFC. I think that's trouble for him. And in addition to that, in his contender series fight, we saw Cedricus Dumas sort of deal with some of the grappling, and man, did he look good there too. So even if Fremd were to get inside and start to grapple, I think Dumas has got a lot of backup plan there as well. I think the reach advantage is going to play a big factor here. I love the negative 180 money line.
All right, let's stay on the undercard here. And whenever I see Carl Williams, I'm old. So it goes back to Carl the Truth Williams, who used to fight for the heavyweight championship. Didn't work out very well against Mike Tyson back in the day. This version of Carl Williams is over a $2 betting favorite in the heavyweight division. Do you think that he should be priced accordingly?
Yeah, you know me, I'm usually looking for an underdog on these prelims, but there's actually a couple of like $2 favorites who I love here out the gate, and Carl Williams is one of them. And the big reason why is if you go back and you like look at Lukasz Brzeski's fight with Martin Boudet in his debut, he's not a particularly fast guy. He puts good combinations together. He's got good pressure. He's tough as nails, but he's not a particularly fast guy. And the thing about Carl Williams is Carl Williams was a light heavyweight coming into the UFC. He took a short notice fight on the Contender Series, and he did so against an incredible grappler in Jimmy Lawson. And not only did he look great on the feet, as he always has, very quick hands, very good power, but he showed he low-key has some awesome wrestling too. You know, he out wrestled Jimmy Lawson, not just defended the takedowns himself. So I think he has that wrestling advantage here against Brzeski if it's not going well on the feet. And in addition to that, I think he's so fast, particularly for this heavyweight division, that while he's a little undersized and he is going to be against a lot of heavyweights, I think that speed's going to give a lot of people trouble.
I might think about making a little two-way parlay there with the minus 205 for Williams and the minus 85, 185 in the first fight. Let's get to a fighter that I think you might think the dog could be barking in this one. And again, you're looking at Victor Henry against Tony Gravely here. Gravely is the small dog in this one. Do we finally have an underdog that Dan Vreeland likes?
It's wild that we had to wait three fights, right? But no, I do really like Tony Gravely. I think low-key Tony Gravely gets slept on for having a couple of fights where he tired out and wound up not finishing his opponent and wound up paying the price. You know, the Nate Maness fight sticks out for me. He had Maness in all kinds of trouble in round one, was completely gassed out for round two and wasn't able to finish it and wound up getting finished in return. And the thing I think people don't know is he's got such a huge wrestling advantage. He is really great in the grappling department. And unless somebody can stuff his wrestling, they really wind up in a bad place for a lot of the fight here. I'm pretty sure that he's not going to be able to put Victor Henry away. Henry's super tough, but I do think Henry has the potential of spending two rounds here on his back. And I will say this, I think he likes to grapple so much, Victor Henry does, that there's a chance he jumps a guillotine and he winds up on the bottom, or he's cool looking for a Kimura, or he's cool looking for a triangle choke. And I think Tony Gravely is smart enough to stay out of him. So that could just be an extra way that he gains extra control time. He looks better on the judges' scorecards, and it makes it a little easier for him to beat Victor Henry here.
All right, two underdogs I want to be interested in, but I'm going to get your thoughts first on it. Tyson Nams plus $1.65 against Bruno Silva. Silva almost a $2 betting favorite. And then the Queen of Violence, Ariana Lipsky, a huge underdog to J.J. Aldrich here. Aldrich is minus 320. Lipsky really needs a win. She's been struggling as of late. Are there any live dog scenarios with either Lipsky or Nam, in your opinion?
I will give you one of those two for sure. And unfortunately, it's not going to be the Queen of Violence because I just think J.J. Aldrich, I think she gets slept on for being as good as she is. You know, like if you go back and you look at some of J.J. Aldrich's fights, including the one she had with Erin Blanchfield, man, did she look game in that fight. Yep. Now, she did eventually get submitted by Erin Blanchfield, but now, how good did that loss age? Because Erin Blanchfield's out here finishing Jessica Andrade, and she was troubling her with the hands. The fact that I think she's so tough and so hard to take down, I think means that this fight is going to take place on the feet. And if she can turn it into a gritty fight, I really don't think Lipsky's going to look all that good in the clinch with her. I don't think Lipsky might even look good at distance with her, which is why you see her at negative 320 here. Now, if you are looking for value on this fight, take it by decision. You'll make that number look a little bit better. But of course, you know, that kind of is the way it goes with women's flyweight fights. And then on the other side, I'll back you on Tyson Nam here. I think Tyson Nam's punching power plays up against a guy like Bruno Silva. Bruno Silva, a guy coming off of a back-to-back knockouts. Back-to-back knockouts, one of which was against a short-notice replacement. The guy didn't look like he was prepared to fight in there. And the other one was a TKO. If he thinks he's a knockout artist and he's going to fight Tyson Nam, that's a bad idea, because we just saw that workout with Ode Osborne. Ode Osborne, a guy who beat Charles Johnson, could not strike with Tyson Nam. In fact, he wound up beating the big one and sleeping. I think Tyson Nam's punching power plays up in just about any fight. And against a guy who's fallen in love with his hands in Bruno Silva, I like his odds there to pick up the upset.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Plus $1.65 for Nam. So if this fight stays standing, he's got a really good shot to pull in that upset. Let's get to the main card here. And again, we were expecting Nikita Krylov against Ryan Spann a couple weeks ago as a main event. Now, of course, because Krylov got sick, that fight had to be scrapped. And now here we are 2 weeks later. It's going to be a three-round non-main event fight here, and they're going to fight at a catchweight 215. Does that change your handicap of this fight from what you might have seen 2 weeks ago?
So I was already in on Ryan Spann, first of all. So I like the fact that his number didn't change, because when I heard that this fight was being rebooked, I was like, well, there goes my plus 145 on Ryan Spann. His number is going to go closer to even. Krylov is sick. You know, the fight's 2 weeks later. You know, he's already the bigger of the two guys. So now not having to cut weight, people are going to be like, oh, yeah, he's got an advantage there. And the number stayed. Not only did the number stay, it's even moved a little bit. You know, Krylov has gone up as a favorite. He's negative 170 now. I think he was only negative 155, negative 160. So, yeah, I'm all over Ryan Spann in this spot. I think the fact that, you know, Krylov was already kind of an erratic fighter who you never really could trust his performances. Now he's coming off of an illness that kept him out of a fight just 2 weeks ago, and we still don't really know what it is. I love the fact that Ryan Spann is getting some nice dog money here. And I'll say this, my original breakdown just said, I don't know that he'll be able to deal with the length of Ryan Spann. And when he shoots that takedown, which I think he inevitably is going to do, Ryan Spann has got one of the sneakiest guillotines you've seen in the light heavyweight division. Would not be surprised if Ryan Spann upset you here with a submission. And I know that number is really juicy. It's like plus 500. I know people are out there loving the knockout prop, but I'm telling you, Ryan Spann by submission here.
Ooh, 5-1 if you like Superman Spann via decision, or excuse me, via submission. Very quickly, main event, Peter Yan, Merab Dilashvili. How do you see this one playing out?
I think this is all Peter Yan. I see the number at negative 250. I liked it better, obviously, when it was, you know, in the negative 180s or whatever it was earlier in the week, or, you know, last week for that matter. But the thing for me is I go back to that fight with Merab Dilashvili versus Marlon Moraes. And like, he just got outstruck so badly on the feet, couldn't get his wrestling going. And eventually Moraes tired out and Merab took over and wins that fight. TKOs him with some ground and pound. That's not an option against Piotr Jan. That dude is not going to tire out in a three-round fight, or even a five-round fight for that matter. Five-round fight, and his boxing is better than Marlon Moraes. You don't have to worry about his chin either.
Yeah, that's going to be a heck of a main event, though. But I'm with you. I understand what you're saying with Peter Jan there. Not the same fighter that Dilashvili had against Marlon Moraes. Dan, great stuff as always. We'll see you next week. Coming back here, going to Washington, D.C. with Reed Kuhn next here on First Strike.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media,
as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Continuing First Strike here on VSiN. Time to go out to Washington, D.C. to catch up with the one and only Reed Kuhn. You can follow Reed as I do at Fightnomics. He's the author of a book of the same name, Fightnomics. And boy, the data was out in full effect last week at UFC 285. Reed, a really, really profitable night. Hopefully everybody was able to watch you last week here in the program. The models did not disappoint. What was your biggest takeaway from UFC 285?
Well, you know, I like wrestlers, and in the main event, you know, sometimes you have a total stylistic contrast and you got to bank with what's safe. And that's my wrestling. John Jones brought it. He made it look easy. But I also, my takeaway was trust the numbers. We had a small stab on Grasso at 6-1 and that came through. So that was a nice little sprinkle on the top that made us open up the top shelf.
You get to the good stuff on the bar. I see there after a very profitable Saturday night at UFC 285. Let's get to this week because I'm always fascinated by your numbers, Reed. And I know now, certainly with the wrestlers over the last couple of years talking on this program, how much the numbers really value them. So you look at Peter Yan, a guy who can wrestle, right? But again, against a guy like Merab Dzhulashvili, we know that's what he'd like to do, is get this fight down to the ground. Potentially five-round matchup here in the main event. What are the numbers showing you here?
Yeah, they reinforce that narrative. And first of all, if you look at this entire card, which does have heavyweights, it does have light heavyweights, who has the most knockdowns of anyone on this card? It's Peter Yan. Mm-hmm. He has 10 knockdowns recorded. He's only been dropped once. He is a heavy-handed bantamweight. You don't always see that. And his technical striking is clearly superior. You know, he's very accurate on his feet. Now, he doesn't have quite the pace that Merab has. And I think we saw that in those battles with Aljamain Sterling. You know, Yan was getting pressured. And if you stifle his offense, then he doesn't have as many weapons. And if you get him on the ground or on the fence, that's how you stifle the weapons. And Merab has that opportunity here. Now, if I was picking this straight up, I would go Yan. And the takedown defense of 90% is reassuring. But this is a situation. Merab has been one of those guys. He can string together takedown after takedown and put you against the fence. He has very high clinch control. He has dominant grappling on the mat. And you add that up, and basically half of all rounds are spent dealing with his pressure. And so the other half, you have to, you know, somehow win the round with striking alone. So with these odds where they are, it's a value play for me on the upset.
Yeah, and again, it feels like the number's been going up rapidly. Yan now minus 250. Merab coming back at plus 210. I wonder if the number's going to keep going up to get even more value before we get to Saturday night. Because of what you said with Dzhulashvili, kind of that wet blanket type wrestler, right? He's just always constantly pressuring. I understand why the number is at 4.5 here, and it's juiced heavily to the over, minus 215. If you think the fight's going to go the distance and not even pick a winner, that you got to lay $2 to do that. Do you see any finishing potential here? You mentioned the knockdowns of Yan. So KO, TKO, DQ, you can get plus money at plus 250 if you like Yan there. By decision, you can get Yan at plus $1.10. I know the numbers kind of show that it's a value play on Dzhulashvili, but what about how we think this fight's going to end? Do you see any finishing potential there?
I do like where your head is at with Petr Yan and his striking. And that's a pretty juicy return for a striking finish, because if, you know, as far as bantamweights go, he is well poised to achieve that, because if he does get it in open water for extended periods of time, he's absolutely going to be winning those exchanges. He has very slick counters, but they turn into combinations. So I like the strikes piling up, and he does have five rounds to work. We know that he has a gas tank. But, you know, while I might play the value on Merab, if I were to pick a prop on the Yan side, if I was supporting him, I would look for a really high return on a striking finish, because it's not intuitive to think that two bantamweights who are going to be grappling a lot, there's going to be a striking finish. But Yan does have that knockdown power that is, it's unlike anybody else on the card right now in terms of how many he's racked up.
Yeah, and I look at it too, and I'm right there with you. If you like Jan, don't want to lay the big price tag down, maybe plus 250 is the way to go. And conversely, Dilashvili, the number's telling you 12 to 1 to get a KO. Sub is 16 to 1. Really, the better opportunity there might be Murad by decision, and you get 3 to 1 there. So you can kind of almost hedge it there as this fight progresses. Let's get to the co-main event here in the Battle of the Alexanders here. It should be a pretty interesting fight for Romanov against Volkov here. Volkov, the much bigger man. I know you've got a lot of data on him at 6'7", 256, against a guy who's 6'2", and 239. What are the numbers showing you? Is there any value at Volkov at plus $1.35?
Stylistically, no. I'm probably going to go with the wrestler here. Now, the numbers do support. He has the clear striking advantage. Volkov has that really long reach. He's very precise. He's got the long-range kickboxing game. We've seen him, when he gets at that range, he looks unstoppable because he can pick people apart and just pile up the strikes. He's not really a one-hitter-quitter kind of guy. Mm-hmm. As far as heavyweights go, his actual knockdown rate per strike is actually below average, so that's not really his style. And I think that helps us here because Romanov is probably going to be diving in for the takedowns pretty early, pretty often. So you want to make sure that he's not doing that against someone who can put him away with one shot. I don't think that's the case here. I think Romanov can eat a few shots. He can take a little damage on the way in, and each round he just has to get it on the ground and pin him, and he is fully equipped to do that. Volkov's takedown defense at 73% is decent, but I think it's just going to pile up, and he doesn't have that power that I would want to be able to bank on a striker facing a wrestler.
Yeah, great point. I go back to Shades of Curtis Blaydes against Derek Lewis. Wins that first round and kind of dives in for a takedown. One punch ends it. That's not what Volkov does. So Romanov here, the likely, the reasonable, you can understand why now he is the favorite. It's flipped to him as the favorite. I do want to get to Ryan Spann. I'm always fascinated by your numbers, Reed. Certainly when you have catchweight scenarios here now, fight that was supposed to be the main event a couple weeks ago, now rebooked here 2 weeks later, and they're going to fight at 215 pounds and only three rounds here for Nikita against Ryan. How does that affect the models, or does it affect them at all?
I'm going to dismiss that pretty much and ignore the fact that this has been rebooked and there's a lot of weird stuff going on outside the cage. But I was already going to be on Krylov in that fight. Nothing about the situation really changes that. I didn't hear anything that would preclude me to think from, you know, all right, this guy's really injured and something different is going on. I'm still going to be on Krylov again, and it's the story of the grappling. Now, it does concern me. He's a little sloppy on the feet. He eats some punches, and you can't really do that at light heavyweight for very long. Spann does have that, you know, one punch knockdown power that we were just talking about, a heavyweight who does not. That is a concern. This is not a fight that anybody is expecting to go the distance, but I do think it's going to be Krylov on the ground, and I think it's going to be his grappling and his submissions that actually get a finish here.
Okay, that's fascinating because, again, what's changed now, because it's 5 to 3 rounds potentially here, we know that Ryan Spann probably is not the type of guy that wants to go deep into the night, right? So he'd like to get this done if the upset's going to happen earlier. The total rounds prop here, you can get plus money over a round and a half, plus $1.05. But you mentioned Krylov here by submission. That's plus 215. Is that the better way to go? Or do you think that eventually Spann's going to tire? And so instead of playing Krylov and laying, you know, the minus $1.70, $1.80, you can get that plus money at a sub at plus 215.
I like the sub angle here. Krylov is pretty crafty with those. We've seen him do a lot of different types of submissions, and that's something I look for. It's not in the numbers, you know, it's really about quantity and how often they can get a submission in. But in his case, I like diversity of submissions, and it just shows that he has that finishing instinct. And, you know, that gives him more options as the fight goes on.
Yeah, so maybe potentially if that's a way to go, because again, we know Spann has, seems like he's got some cardio issues later on in the fight. So if you think that maybe Krylov can get him down to the mat, maybe get that sub, you can turn that negative into a positive, plus 215. All right, Reed, let's go down the card a little bit. In one of the ladies' fights that I'm really intrigued by, J.J. Aldrich, a huge favorite against Ariana Lipsky here. We know Lipsky's been struggling here recently in the UFC. What are the numbers showing you on two fighters that appear to be heading in opposite directions?
Yeah, this is one of those ones where I'm looking at the numbers and the line is divergent, but the numbers are very even. And so when I see that, I usually, you take the plus money and you look for the value on the underdog. So as with Petr Yan, you know, probabilistically, I think he's going to win, but only just barely. And when that price is 2-1, you know, that's just out of whack for me. So I got to take the value play, just like I did with Alexa Grasso. Mm-hmm. And this is another situation where I see it as closer to a coin flip than the odds suggest. And the odds of they keep going. I mean, I ran this and Lipsky was, you know, barely 200 plus 240. And now she's pushing plus 300. She used to be pretty vicious, and I don't know what we lost during that period of time, but there is still a killer instinct with Lipsky, and I like to watch her fight. She's got that she looks like the queen from the TV show Visitor. That's what I always think of when I see her. So she's like a reptile underneath, and she's ready to kill. So I think there's some potential here. Again, coin flip fight. If you look for enough of those and you get enough value on the return on the upset, it's going to pay off in the long run.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I see that number and I keep going, what am I missing in this fight? I get Aldrich and the pedigree she has now, but Queen of Islands at plus 265 with the number going up, I think you're right on. Feels like a value play to me. Hey, Reed, we really appreciate your insight each and every week here on First Strike. Enjoy the fights. We'll catch up again next week. All right, there he is, everybody. Reed Kuhn. You can follow him on Twitter as I do, at Reed Kuhn. So, wow. Wrapping up a wild UFC 285, and then no rest for the weary here as we have a great main event with Merab Dzhulashvili against Petr Yan. Enjoy the fights. We'll see you next week right here. First Strike on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.